We take a single episode of a science fiction TV series and overanalyze it to within an inch of its life. This is the Fusion Patrol Podcast. Welcome to the discussion. Hello and welcome to another episode of Fusion Patrol. I'm Eugene.
And I'm Ben.
And tonight we are looking at the fourth series of Blake 7, episode number 2, Power. On Zenon base, Villa is attempting to open the door to the hangar to the Scorpio. It's a difficult job, and even he can't do it alone. He'll need Avon for the computer security. If they don't get into the hangar, they are trapped on the planet, and they have limited food. Outside on the surface, Avon has run into the savage-like Hommocks and knocked unconscious, not for the last time in this episode, and taken prisoner. He is searching for crystals. Tarrant and Dana start searching for Avon, but unbeknownst to them, three females, the Seska, are watching them. One of them enters Zenon base and talks with Villa. She warns him that there is a compression charge on the hangar door, and if Dorian doesn't activate the safety mechanism every 48 hours, it will destroy the base. Dorian is, of course, dead. Avon explores the mystery of the Hommocks and the Seska, is knocked unconscious a few more times, asserts his manliness, and ultimately escapes. Meanwhile, the others discover that there was a war between the men and the women of the planets, with the men winning. The Seska are surgically altered to have a power crystal attached to their necks. With it, they have telekinetic powers. Without it, they're just women, suitable for having babies for the Hommocks. Once the hangar door is open, Pella, one of the last two Seska, locks everyone out again and steals the Scorpio, killing the remaining Seska on her way. Avon takes the crystal from the dead Seska's neck, which just happens to be exactly the crystal he needed to get Dorian's proto-teleport system, with Orak's help, of course, working. He teleports aboard the fleeing Scorpio and kills Pella. Avon's band of merry rebels has a new spaceship and a new crew member. Sulin signs aboard. Well, the return of everyone's favorite Blake 7 writer, Ben Steed, last seen in Moloch, and the Harvest of Kairos. It almost pains me with terror to ask, what'd you think of this episode?
I've got five words for you.
Can
this
you say them?
This is going to suck. And that this was when I saw who wrote it. Mm-hmm. Now, it literally, the top of my notes reads, by Ben Steed, writer of Moloch and the Harvest of Kairos. This is going to suck.
This is going to suck. You know, the 1970s weren't the most enlightened time. And with regards to feminism, for example. And I'm going to admit here that as a sort of privileged old white male, there are times when I see things, say, on Facebook from people in my circles, women, and usually, and something that somebody has said or done has been casually sexist, and they call them out on it for its casual sexism. I feel that's kind of where we are in the world. And I don't see those things. I don't see them until they call them out. And I go, yeah, all right, I can see that. But when I watch an episode like this, my butt clenches. This is so awful.
Oh, please.
You know, this is, I can't even imagine this being acceptable when this was made. I guess actually probably the 1980s at this point.
Which is a bit shocking. My 80s. It was not quite there yet. I mean, in the States, we were still trying to, you know, women were still trying to push for ERA, Equal Rights Amendment.
And we saw how well that worked.
Yeah, that didn't happen, did it? And I seem to remember we've had past discussions about how things were in Britain. I think we talked about it during our conversations about UFO and agreed that surprisingly enough, the UK was actually sort of behind us, I guess, in social evolution.
In some ways. I mean, I think it's interesting that we kind of look we look to Europe as being sort of ahead of us on social issues, but there are definitely times when I feel like it's exactly the opposite. And this is... I think this is one of them. Yeah, it just, it really... And it could very well be that we're talking about a writer here who's espousing his 30-year-old views on this, but it's really, really distasteful. And the notion is that these women only have this power if they've got this technological crystal built into their bodies. But when you take it away from them, well, gosh, then I become a woman and I can fall in love and have babies. And some of the lines that Avon says, like when Pella is trying to get him to do, he wants the crystal. Pella won't let him have the crystal. He grabs her. She uses her telekinetic powers to hurt him. And he, you know, says, oh, well, that hurts, but it's not good enough. And he keeps grabbing her. And I mean, it's just, it's a complete BS macho. I'm just going to stand this pain until you give it up. And then he gives this little dialogue about how it's, you know, it's unfair, but it's a biological fact. A man's always going to be more powerful than a woman.
Yeah.
And then he kisses her.
Oh, I didn't even know what to think about that.
I know. I mean, he crawls up so close to her and he's holding her in the hand this time when I was listening to it, I noticed it sounded like he actually was breaking her hand. When she falls down, there's a sort of crack noise, like he's popping her, maybe not breaking it, but, you know, cracking her knuckles. He's holding her hand tightly. This is not just, I'm just stopping you from causing me pain. He's hurting her.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, Avon has never been a particularly nice guy. But again, we're in that kind of rapey power trip thing that's going on here. And it really is, yeah, yeah. Ben Steed clearly has something.
I maybe half a brain.
And we're back to that whole technology thing.
Uh-huh.
The men are living the sort. The message was unclear here in this one to me.
Thank you. I kept wondering, what was he trying to say in this episode? Was there a moral? Is there some kind of a message that the story is supposed to have? I mean, if it does, if it's there, it's failing miserably because I sure as heck can't see it.
Yeah, I mean, once again, we have a civilization which has collapsed. Blake 7 is full of those. They've reverted to barbarism, but in this case, they've reverted to barbarism, but they still have the knowledge and the skills. They just don't allow themselves to use them, and yet they don't really have the skills. It's more like, well, I know what an internal combustion engine is, and I can use one, but I don't really understand an internal combustion engine. And so as they lose things, they don't get them back. So they're in this downward spiral, but they're not stupid. You know, when Avon brings in stuff, they identify his technical equipment, even though they're running around like a bunch of cavemen.
Yeah.
And then we have the guy who's the power behind the throne, who's been running the computer room, and he clearly doesn't like the state of things. He's very bitter about it. Of course, they kill him off, so we don't... It's not like Harvest of Kairos, where we've got a very clear-cut, you know, the natural manly way of building with your hand and cutting wood with a saw is the real way to live life, with the sun at your back and the wind up your nose. And, you know, we don't quite get this. And, of course, in Moloch, they're obsessed with the future evolution of the race and how bad that's going to be. But here we've got this sort of, and then the completely and utterly ridiculous and illogical war of the sexes.
Yes, which to me I find to be such a cliche storyline, and then to turn around and say, but humanity is really best served when the sexes come together and the women are subservient to the men.
To the
wife beating men.
Because yeah, they seem much happier.
Oh, he likes to throw her around.
Yeah, but she seems...
She likes it.
Happier.
Right.
Yeah.
So we're also playing the victim card here about how women, you know, oh, but, the, you know, I deserve to be beaten.
Yeah, the less said about that, perhaps... Enough to say that this is a the war of the sexes here is utterly and completely distasteful. It's stupid, and I feel like I've been talking about this just on Space 1999 just the other day.
You think?
Yeah, it's funny that I don't know whether this episode goes out before that one or that one goes out before this one, but there may be a Space 1999 episode coming that has something to do with something like this. I don't know.
Well, it'd be awfully funny if we got something, you know, 2 weeks in a row.
That. It's not impossible. Okay, so let's. We have to give some talk to Mr. Manly Avon, and I don't mean his beating up on the Seska.
Oh, you mean him being beaten up on and knocked out?
Three times, if I count correctly, three or four times.
He came off as unbelievably incompetent,
and yet when he battles Gunsar. At the beginning, I mean, did that not remind you of I am the doctor and this is my spoon?
Oh, yes.
You know, I'll have a neutron. What weapon do you want? Neutron blaster? No, we don't have neutron blasters. I'll have a glove then. And then he uses that for insulation to protect himself while using something at hand to take out a gun. And he won. Fair enough, he won. The only reason he got knocked on the head was because he... wasn't paying attention to people walking behind him.
Which he seemed very good at doing in this episode.
He did get conked from behind more than once.
Oh, several times. It was very irritating.
But there was definitely this, like, just... Even when he's standing in Gunsar's presence, I mean, at the beginning, he's been dragged in there. He is just oozing, I am manly man.
Oh, yeah. The machismo was... It was pathetic.
So is that post? Is this to be post terminal Avon? Is
God,
this a compensation mechanism?
I hope not. Because if this is what we have to look forward to, no, I'm going to say no. No, this is to say post terminal Avon would imply that this is what we've got going from here on out, and I don't believe it. I'm simply saying no. This is a Ben Steed Avon.
All right, we'll cross our fingers and hope it continues, not Ben Steedley. This is his last episode.
Thank God.
Yeah.
It could not have come soon enough.
I'm amazed they hired him back twice more after Harvest of Kairos.
Man, I have no words.
All right. One thing that did cross my mind watching this one, that... I kind of felt pleased about, and I know that's hard to come by something to say you're pleased about with this episode. Are we seeing the return of the story arc? This is clearly a follow-on to the previous episode.
Yeah, it is. I guess it is, although, but oddly enough for me, it felt more episodic than arc.
Well, it certainly is its own self-contained story about the Seska and the Hommix. There's no doubt about that. But, you know, I think we can safely say now that we've reached this point without it being spoilery, that the Scorpio is their new ship.
It's a foregone conclusion.
Right. And so coming into this episode, they still didn't have it. So we're kind of looking back to... Spacefall, the way back, or way back, Spacefall, Cygnus Alpha, those first few episodes where we had to set up Blake the prisoner, set up the prison ship, set up the Liberator, set up getting the crew out of Cygnus Alpha, and then it kind of rolled into episodic TV. But there was that block of the first four episodes that really set us up in the story. And having had the entirety of the series basically crushed out from under their feet in the final episode of Series 3, I think we're getting a little bit of that now, where Chris Boucher has to reestablish the show because everything's gone.
Oh, yeah. I mean, as we discussed at the end of Terminal, there wasn't supposed to be a Season 4. So now they're scrambling.
And a different producer, too, I believe.
Hmm. Didn't notice that.
David Maloney was the producer before, and now it's Vera Lorimer, I believe. Or maybe it was Vera Lorimer before, and now it's David Maloney. I could look that up, but that seems so much like actual research and when we have Wikipedia.
Hmm. Well.
Listeners, look that up. Vera Lorimer, David Maloney. Pretty sure there was a switch here come about the end of this at this point. Just like when Callie Jan Chappell took another job in the interim time. It's like, you know, things happen when you don't tell people that you're going to renew their show until the last episode's renewing. Let's see. What else do we have? Kind of an interesting structure to the story. I use that word interesting with a certain amount of irony. Avon is basically isolated from everyone else for the entirety of the episode.
Yeah, pretty much.
He comes in right at the last minute, and that's it. He does not interact with Dana or Tarrant or Villa until he comes storming in to show that he had actually outthought them and wasn't going to let them steal the Scorpio without him. which is odd, unless it was a cost-saving, you know, get two units running at once. But we kind of get the dynamic that Tarrant and Dana and Villa, they even say it outright, Orak doesn't respect them.
True. He respects Avon.
Have we ever seen any evidence of that before?
No.
Not really. Not really, but I mean, he is intentionally not giving them answers.
Yeah.
In this episode. I mean, he is at his Orakian
That's a good
worst.
Word.
You know, it's well within the capabilities of your mind to work it out, so let me get on with the things that aren't, and then...
Well, he's busy. He's got his own things to think about.
Yeah, he has done that in the past, but he seemed remarkably disinterested in his own well-being until about 13 minutes from the end. You know, he obviously knew how long it was till the compression charge. He didn't bother to tell anybody.
Right.
So, that was, again, I'd hate to be able to attribute this to Ben Steed because it actually feels like they're trying to do something with Orak. You know, it's
well, there's not enough. I don't know.
It's not like a throwaway line. You know, he only respects Avon, and yet anything that comes out of Ben Steed's pen to me is a throwaway line.
Oh, it's true, but I don't really. I mean, you said it. I mean, Orak is at his most Orakian in this one, especially, you know, the way he's treating the remaining crew. But it's more so in this episode than we've seen in past episodes. So, again, I can't help but think that this is Ben Steed just simply writing and not really knowing what he's writing.
Yeah, this could be. I honestly don't really have anything. I mean, this episode is so...
It's void of substance.
It is void of substance. And...
I mean, my notes are, I mean, the number of sentences in my notes is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 sentences of notes. I mean, that's just, I had to really work at that.
Oh, and we had Dana challenge Gunsar.
Yeah, which I actually thought was interesting.
She did that in Power of Kairos, Harvest of Kairos, too. So that's a Ben Steed trope. And the Seska killed him through telekinetic power. I thought that was, I mean, they conk Avon over the head 3 times and he's still alive. Gunsar hits his head once and he's dead.
He's dead.
So, yeah, that was kind of weird. And the other thing, yeah, see, everything I look at my notes is just, it's just complaints about the sexism in it.
Yeah.
You know, beginning line. When our spirit is broken, we give them sons.
I mean, I've got, you know, similar stuff like that. I mean, I'm not quoting lines, but similar kinds of analysis, you know, saying things like, I'm so tired of the male tribe, female tribe, separate society setting, you know, talking about male superior strength, follow with a kiss, things like that. It's like, I mean, wow.
Hmm.
I mean, that's, if this is what I'm hinging my analysis on, then what does that say about this episode? Well, it says it's pretty doggone bad.
Pretty bad. There is one thing of importance that come out of it, or two things of importance that come out of the episode. One is they get a working teleport.
Hey, now.
Now, there's an idea. I mean, they had this great spaceship that had incredible power, and it had a teleport, which gave them an enormous advantage. And then they went and blew it up. So now they've got themselves a ship, and they've got themselves teleport again. It's just like they're resetting.
It is a bit of a reset, isn't it?
I'm kind of surprised that, well, who knows? Maybe it'll still happen. But I'm kind of surprised that they didn't just go for, why don't we go over to where the system was?
And get another Liberator?
And see if we can find another Liberator.
Yeah.
You know, I mean...
Unless they completely, you know, demolish the set. But then, of course, what are we doing now? They build a new set.
Yeah, they just build a new set. This time they make it kind of a Mark II or something. And then the other thing of importance in this episode, and it's important in two ways. One is it's important in its absence, and then it's important in its presence. And that's Sulin. Completely
gone. And then she shows up at the last second, and I found that to be just very weird.
Because... don't you think she probably could have reset the?
She could have done something with that
compression charge.
Yeah,
because Dorian has to do it every 48 hours, and Dorian had flown to Terminal and rescued them. Don't you think he was gone more than 48 hours?
Most likely, especially since we've learned. I mean, Scorpio is not the fastest ship.
No, it's just an old Starhopper with a fancy computer. I think it's Starhopper. Is what they call it, with a fancy computer. So, you know, it's, unless Terminal just happened to be nearby.
Like next door. Center, that'd be convenient, wouldn't it?
It would, kind of like that prison planet being convenient to the Moloch planet. It's like, hey, we needed a place where we could get deadly rapists and killers to come to our planet, and it just happens to be one nearby. But that was not this episode. Well, it was, though, because...
Yeah, in a way it was.
48-hour. Yeah. The 48-hour thing was invented in this episode, not the previous one.
Correct.
But, you know, that does seem like a terribly stupid system that Dorian had. Well, I don't... there's one thing about it. When we came to the end of Terminal, and they'd arrived at Zenon Base, and they'd killed Dorian, we were left with... I don't want to say a mystery, but, you know, a series of challenges that were in their hands that, you know, to try to get it back to the show we know. And so I had a certain amount of expectations at that time that, because they'd already set up that there was a proto-teleport and that Dorian was trying to get one working and was hoping to use Orak to create one.
Right.
And there's the ship. So it looked like we had some stuff they had to take care of, like making sure they had the ship and make sure they got the teleport, etc. Coming to the end of this episode, I got nothing.
Yeah.
Where do they go from here?
No idea.
Do they launch their attack on the Federation again? Which, you know, Servalon dead and Blake dead now, we're certain. And... they don't have a super Uber ship anymore. They do have teleport, but and they've still got Orak. But really, does that seem like what...
that? Yeah, let's tackle the Federation with that.
Yeah, so are they going to go on the piracy run again? They've got a planet now.
Well, at least they have a base, but they can't get very far, can they?
Exactly. So I just, you know, it's hard to picture what the future for Blake 7 is at this moment.
No, not a clue.
And nothing has been signaled.
Uh-uh. Nothing. So in a way, it does feel like this is one very bizarre sort of reset button having been pushed, starting the whole thing all over again. But even in the beginning, you had some kind of an idea where it was going to go. I mean, even before we knew everything that Liberator could do, we had a sense of what Blake, Avon, and Callie were going to be up to. We had a sense that, okay, they're going to come into the ship, and this is going to be their means by way of striking out. I mean, you had that. And so even though we've had this reset here, we've been given these other little variations to kind of make you think, well, it feels like a reset, but not.
Yeah. Yeah. Avon does not have, even though he didn't do it much, he doesn't have the quest for Blake.
No.
Tarrant, I don't know what Tarrant does. Little Papyrusy, I suppose, maybe. Dana no longer has the quest to kill Servalan.
Nope.
Villa, you know, as long as there's a bottle of booze, that's the only quest he's got going.
Villa is Villa, and does Sulan have a quest?
She's a gun for hire.
Yeah.
So she's just...
She's all about the money.
And they don't have any money.
None.
That went up with a Liberator.
Yep.
So, oh well. I guess then we'll have to do it the hard way and find out what the next episode's actually about.
Oh, bloody hell.
See where it goes. Only 11 left.
Is that all?
13 per season, so we've watched two of these. So
God, how long have we been talking about this show?
Well...
Over a year now.
Well, you come to the end of the show, there's 52 episodes. We get one about every 3 weeks, so 3 years.
Wow.
So we're into the last year.
Feels like 30.
That's the arthritis kicking in on us. Well, I guess that's it then.
Wow. Yeah, because there's short episode because there was just nothing really of significance to talk about with this one. I mean, it's not exactly – I'm not going to say that this was a terrible story, but oh my God, was it wasteful.
You know, it could have been an okay story about them trying to get into the hangar.
Yeah, if that were the A plot.
And they could have just had something that wasn't quite so offensively – Ben Steedish,
yeah,
on the planet, but you know his tropes just dropped in there again, and it's like, let's teach women their place.
What else has this horrible writer done?
Didn't we look it up last time?
We did, there was nothing there. There was absolutely nothing
I think
that
did
I cared
some
about.
Zed Cars or something, or
I think he might have written for
some police procedurals. Where
I think he's written for BBC soaps or something like that.
Well, that would make a certain amount of sense.
It would.
Well, despite the paucity of subject material to talk about and the relative distaste of the episode, Ben, thank you for joining me.
Oh, what a joy.
And listeners, I hope you'll join us all again next time for, hopefully, a more bright, shiny episode of Fusion Patrol.
Cheers.
Fusion Patrol is a Lone Locust production. Like us? Please consider becoming our sponsor at patreon.com/fusionpatrol. We'd really appreciate it if you could leave us a review on iTunes. Stop by and visit us at our website, fusionpatrol.com. Search for us on Facebook under Fusion Patrol. Check out our Twitter handle, @FusionPatrol. Or just send us an email at feedback@fusionpatrol.com. Please come join the conversation. Our music is Fight the Future by Amber Wolf. That was unpleasant. Going to be some edits in this episode. Or amusing bloopers. I don't know which it's going to be.